Welcome to the last episode of Chamber Breakers, presented by Verizon Business and Yahoo Finance. I'm Leanna Brinded, head of Yahoo Finance UK.
And I'm Xavier White, CSR and Innovation Marketing Manager at Verizon Business. During this series, Leanna and I have been inviting thought leaders to break the echo chambers surrounding key social challenges.
This season, we focused on CSR at a time of global crisis and the impact this time in history has had on various segments of our society and vulnerable communities.
We'll be finishing off this season with Richard Cooper about the impact the global crisis is having on the UK homeless population. Richard is the founder of Footworks, which provides specialist podiatry services and new shoes to homeless people across London.
When the coronavirus struck in the UK, it's pretty amazing that within weeks, nearly 6,000 homeless people had been accommodated. That just blew through the myth that there is no homes for homeless people. And actually what it's proven is that there is a solution out there if we put our minds together. The big issues for me are many of the people that we serve and many of the people that we have been treating throughout the last 3 years come with very complex issues. They come primarily to get their feet serviced and get their feet looked at. And we provide them with the foot care. If they need shoes, we provide them with shoes. But actually, we're also a signposting organization. So when we treat somebody, we're not just treating their feet, we're looking at the whole person. And what we've not been able to do, and what many of the homeless people are not able to access at the moment, is that additional service. So they come with very complex issues. They might be mental health issues, they might be pulmonary or chest infections, and general health issues. The stigma that most homeless people are addicted to alcohol or addicted to drugs is quite frankly, is not true. Probably less than 2-3% of the homeless community will have addiction issues. The rest of the people are there because of society and because something, they've had an inflection in their life, which has driven them, unfortunately, to live on the streets. And the issues that the pandemic has brought is it's brought a greater risk to that community. So even though many of them are now in accommodation and are being sheltered, the normality that they would have seen, which isn't normal in our world, has been taken away from them. So if you can imagine that, you know, you've taken somebody off the streets, you've put them into a room 24/7, you've allowed them out for 1 hour a day, that's really, really restrictive for many people and certainly very restrictive for the homeless community. And as the beginning of July comes, when many of those people are put back out onto the streets, my hope is that the governments and local authorities and powers that be will have found accommodation for some of them, but many of them will just go back directly to the streets. And for them, it's just going to be a rebuilding exercise. It's going to be a real building exercise mentally. It's going to be an adjustment to society again. It's going to be adjustment to not being focused on and not being able to get what they want. So they're going to have to seek and search out what they need, whether it be food, whether it be a bed for the night, whether it be that essential service. And I think the other thing that COVID has brought is COVID has stretched services generally. Before we went into the COVID situation, if I was a mental health homeless person suffering, I would have already found it really difficult to find a voice, and I would have found it really difficult to find somebody to help me. The problem is compounded now significantly for many, many of those people. And I think come July, those are some of the lessons that we've got to learn. And some of those rebuilding exercises with the individuals, we're going to have to absolutely focus on. And it's about focusing on the whole person rather than just why they are in front of you. COVID has brought around a greater sense of partnership out there, almost definitely. We're now having grassroots organisations working with larger organisations, larger organisations being the grant giver so that grassroots organisations can continue. From a CSR point of view, many organisations out there were already providing monetary support, volunteer support, initiative support. And I guess my big ask and my request from anybody who is in charge of CSR and working with organisations is, please don't just shut the doors. I appreciate that many organizations are re-looking at the way that they do business and they're looking at their budgets and they're looking at their finances. But please do not shut the doors on organizations, particularly in the homeless sector, that need your support. There are ways that you can help. What we have recognized is that these 6,000 people did not need to be on the streets at that time. They are now have roofs over their head. Let's not go back to the ways of old, and let's go back to ways of helping those people through the journey in life. And that's the only thing I would ask.
So thank you, Richard. That was really interesting. And how are we defining homelessness? What are some of the misconceptions around the definitions? What's some of the language we need to make sure that we are or are not using?
It's a really good question. I think the perception that most people have is the homeless person's got a draggly beard with lots of knots in it, looks filthy, and lives on the streets, you know, smokes roll-up cigarettes and drinks a bottle of beer. That myth has been blown out of the water, certainly over the last 5 or 10 years. The audience that and the demographic that we see now is young people, it's old people. I would have been able to say 5 years ago that the average age was about 48, male. 70 to 80% of the people that would have been served at a homeless organisation or a hostel would have been definitely male, and would have been there because, you know, they had left the army, for instance. They would have been driven there by drugs or drink. But the reality now is that we have a definition of homelessness is I can either live on the streets or I could be living on somebody's sofa at home. And as coronavirus has kicked in, what we've also seen is there's been an awful lot of government support and help, because actually it's recognizing that I don't necessarily need to live on the streets to be homeless. I could be living in somebody's living room and they might let me use that for 2 months. We've got examples of guys and girls living in cars. There was an old statistic that you were 4 or 5 weeks away from, you know, being not having a rent check or a housing check. It's less than a week now. And the fear that I have is that one of the resulting factors of the C19 is that actually we're going to see more redundancies. And as a result of that, we will see more homelessness, but not homelessness as our perception leads us to believe, i.e. people living on the streets. It will be people using relatives for support, using their friends for support. So, and as I say, the demographic would have been an older demographic 10 years ago, but today we see every age, and we see broadly every nationality as well.
Richard, you mentioned that the fears that there's going to be an increase in homelessness, mainly because we are in this health pandemic, having this seemingly no light at the end of the tunnel. There is a recession coming, and globally, all countries are really feeling it. And there's job losses at a great scale. Now, the financial crisis, because it wasn't a health pandemic, there was a path to it. But is there anything that we can learn in terms of how we can better handle the increase in people that are probably going to be homeless after this recession?
I mean, I think the biggest thing is we're learning it already. I think because it is a health pandemic, we're actually learning that actually working together is the way forward. When you look at the financial crises that we've been in, we've been able to stick labels directly on bankers, insurers. In this instance, everybody is impacted and everybody is affected. I'm fortunate that, you know, through the work that I do in the day job, I see what's going on in the US, I see what's going on in Europe. And actually, all I have seen is great collaboration and great partnership. And I think if we can continue that great collaboration and great partnership, we will get through it. Yes, unfortunately, there will be winners and losers out of it. And what I see at the moment is that there is going to be a big squeeze in the middle. So, you know, if you look at the ABC demographic, unfortunately, it's going to be the B's and C's that are going to get absolutely squeezed. And those that are living on the minorities and were living on the minorities before are just going to have to shout a little bit harder. What I'm confident on is that the partnerships that I see, particularly in the homeless sector and particularly in the charitable sector, they are working much closer together. And previously, they wouldn't have done that. I sat through a call and a conference call last week with a very large charity within the homeless sector. And I was heartened that actually they have reached out to grassroots organizations to provide that support. And I hope, and they have guaranteed, that they will continue to work with 10 smaller charities going forward. And I think we'll see that in lots more sectors, I would hope.
It's really great to hear that different kinds of charities are working together and that what needs to happen is happening. And I wanted to just quickly look at that from a perspective of, I guess, intersectionality in other communities that are suffering. We know that LGBT homelessness, particularly among the youth demographic, is high. Have you seen that surge as a result of coronavirus or any difference within that kind of sector?
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult one to talk about because before we even went into coronavirus, if you came from the LGBTQ community, you weren't shouting about it because actually you were fearful what might happen to you on the streets. And that has just exacerbated a little bit more for that community out there. There are some great homeless communities for those people. And we work, and as Footworks, we work with some of them. But I am just fearful that unless that voice is heard and we continue to support them in the way that we have continued to support them, they are just going to become a bigger minority group out there. But so I completely agree with your point. But it was fearful going into it, and I think it has just got slightly worse for those groups during coronavirus. Some of them will have found a great space and a great home, and I just hope that those communities out there continue to feel brave enough to shout about their cause, and I absolutely know that those charities that were there supporting them will continue to support them, whatever.
There were some elements of your speech that I really, really wanted to pick up on, especially when it came to during this pandemic, finding a home for the homeless. And like you said, the talk that there weren't enough places for homeless people to go has just been blown out the water because they've been able to rehouse them. But you actually mentioned how it's been quite problematic in a lot of ways. And I'd just like to, for people who don't know, why is it that with the homes that they've put a lot of homeless people in, that they're only allowed to leave once a day? Why has it been so restrictive? Because it pretty much sounds like prison conditions. You're only allowed to leave for 1 hour a day.
Yeah, no, I mean, they have tried to, you know, through Health England, they have tried to apply the same rules that would have applied to anybody. None of us have liked the being constricted the way that we have been constricted. And therefore, it's exactly the same for that community. Therefore, they've only been allowed out for essential exercise or essential medication. And they've had to abide by it. Now, the challenge that brings is that if I'm already an individual that's got multiple needs, I'm already mentally challenged, but I might not be on somebody's register. Providing the home solution isn't the necessary answer. If that individual has been able to get what we refer to as wraparound services whilst they have been living in a hotel or a hostel, then great. But I suspect many of them won't have been able to get the entire wraparound service that they need. So if you can imagine somebody, my day as a homeless person is, I wake up at 5:30. I go to try and find my first meal of the day. I generally go to a homeless centre that I know well. I know the people that run it really well, and I know the group of individuals that share the same experience that I do that access that service. I then leave that hostel and I go somewhere else because actually I know I've got to find a lunch or I've got to find a dinner. That freedom out there for a homeless person was suddenly taken away. So on one level, yeah, it's absolutely right. It was abhorrent that those people were on the streets for a number of weeks after lockdown. It's great that they have been taken off the streets. And the issue now is, how do we make sure that those that don't want to be on the streets have a roof over their head? And how do we make sure that those that do want to return to the streets continue to get the wraparound service that they want? And many of the day centres and the hostels out there are still struggling to work out how they operate and how they would deliver the service that they used to deliver before the lockdown came. And my charity is one of them. You know, I've written to three centres recently this week where we were providing services, and many of them absolutely want us back 100%, but they're not actually sure how we can get back in there yet. So I think we, personally, at a local level, from my charity point of view, I think I've got probably another month before those solutions are there. The social distancing that they're talking about in the press at the moment, is there social distancing? Should there be social distancing? What should social distancing look like? They'll come up with some decisions, I think, before the end of June. And I think that will certainly ease one or two situations for some people.
I just have a quick follow-up to this one, because one of the things is, you know, and we've been talking about how this is affecting homeless people's mental health, but one of the parts that may compound it is the fact that, let's say maybe someone's been on the streets for a very long time and now they've been given a roof over their heads, say, whether it's staying in a hotel or a hostel mm-hmm. or wherever it is, wouldn't actually, you know, in a longer term, really compound how they feel mentally when they have to then be, you know, to be honest, turfed out and go, okay, social distancing measures is, you know, away now, we're getting society back to normal. If they suddenly had that ripped away from them, I mean, how, on what scale can we try and prevent that from happening?
We're in the lap of the local authority. So when coronavirus kicked in, central government provided the funds for that community, the homeless community. What's happened now is that the central government have devolved the responsibility back down to local authorities. It's now for local authorities to make sure that they are provisioning. And all we can do is focus on our local MPs, focus on the local authority, and start campaigning. Crisis, for instance, is launching a campaign this week, Homes for All. And their Homes for All campaign is to basically say, at a local level, every borough, every local authority has choices. And don't get me wrong, the choices between homelessness and abuse in the home, it's a very fine line. Everybody needs support. And in particularly in the area of homelessness, what has proven is Housing First, which is a program out there, Housing First absolutely works, because it treats the whole person. It not only provides the roof, it provides all of the support. Giving somebody a roof isn't the solution. They need financial support. They need financial and monetary support in terms of how to manage money in the home. They need the health support. I give you a lovely example of a guy who was given a roof. Fantastic. It took 5 weeks to get him out of the bathroom because he felt at home. He felt comfortable. He wouldn't leave his bathroom. I've got another example of somebody who was given a roof. He wouldn't go back to the place because it had a letterbox, and his fear was in his prior life, the reason that he drove him to the streets was every other letter was a demand for something. And he felt that, you know, with another letterbox, it was just going to be a demand for something. So trying to treat that whole person and trying to treat some of those mental issues and try and help them break them down, I think does encourage them. And I think you're right, Leanna. If I were a homeless person in a hotel at Mao, I'd feel very grateful, but I'd be very fearful of what comes at the beginning of July for me. But I also know there's an awful lot of support workers out there that are doing absolutely their best to try and help that community and try and find provision for that community as we come out of this lockdown situation. But unfortunately, it won't be for everybody, and not everybody will get a roof over their head. And that will be because some don't want it, and some are in a more difficult situation than others. And that's the bit that hurts me most of the time.
I think that's, personally, I found what you've just said incredibly moving. And really the question that I have that flows up, I mean, and by moving, I do mean heartbreaking. What can we do to help? And, you know, a lot of the people that will be listening to this will work for corporates. I'm very fortunate that I work for a corporate. What can corporates do? In the past, there's been corporate sleep outs, which it could be argued a virtue signaling, but they may help. I don't know. What can we do that actually helps?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. I think underneath this, I think what the first thing an organization and CSR and can realize is that when this is all over, I think realizing that we're all the same, I think, is the most important thing. And I think generally we're all good people. And I hope we will all come to the same conclusion that a more equal and fairer society is generally better for everybody. And therefore, I make the point that if you're about to cut the budget, just think again. You can cut the budget and still do some great work. And I'm not, you know, I'm not pleading. I'm basically saying if you want to continue your mission as a socially responsible organization or business that provides and provisions for the welfare of your team members and employees the same way that you provision and want to provision for the wider society, then there are ways to help. And they might be small gestures, as you quite rightly say. There is the big sleep out. There is encouraging team members to make up little kit bags or provide food, to do a food bank pledge every week. All of those things go a great way that don't actually cost an organization an awful lot of money either, but they are huge initiatives. And buddying up and partnering with some grassroots organizations out there also deliver a huge benefit for an organization. And actually, they deliver a huge benefit for the welfare of the team members and employees within that organization as well, because actually they value, their worth is being valued. And what that says is I value the worth of another individual as well, or an organization.
So, I mean, I'm still actually shaking a little bit about some of the stories that you're telling about, obviously, the tailored needs for individuals when it comes to understanding how to rehome the homeless and also understanding the mental health impact on that. And the thing that really struck me, and so I got a little bit teary, is just about the guy who, you know, was triggered by the postbox because every day there'd be something like a demand and things like that. And it's a very, it's very upsetting. But there's something in that, because when it's saying there's a demand, it will be bills and things like that. Do you think there is a corporate social responsibility as well, though, to actually get to that point to try and prevent homelessness? Yeah. So, for example, do you think that there should be a tweak or how it's looked in CSR to work with maybe the people functions in a corporate to make sure that if there are job, if there are layoffs, that there's a very, there's a procedure that's a bit more generous than what is statutory to prevent further homelessness?
Yeah. Listen, I've been a CEO of organizations in the past, and large organizations, and people welfare is the number one thing. Yeah, it's very easy to say, look, I'm going to right size my organization. But when you look at your people systems and you look at it from a holistic point of view, we all absolutely have a responsibility. It isn't a case of just numbers and boxes. What it is a case of is treating the other individual as a human being on the other side of the other side of the table, and treating them with some care and some consideration. And you're right, there is a need, there's a nice way of doing it, and there's a nasty way of doing it. And I would encourage organizations to do the nice way of doing things and consider the whole person that's in front of them. And I can guarantee now, I work with a US corporation at the moment, and they have a care system. So they're providing medical care. They're providing gyms. So they're providing the mental health and the physical health. And during this process, they've been, you know, they've had to furlough nearly 250 employees. Sadly, they've made some decisions that some of those employees will not be coming back to their organization. But in all of that, they put the person at the center of the conversation rather than the needs of the organization. Profit is important, but if you take a longer term system view of your business rather than the short term fiscal view of your business, I can absolutely guarantee it pays back in spades. I've worked in Canada, I've worked in the US, and I've worked in Europe. In Europe, we take a very short-term view sometimes. All I would ask is you take a longer-term view, and there are ways of doing it. And it might be, don't make the person redundant. Actually, why not job share with that person? Why not give them fewer hours rather than just say, and let them buddy up with somebody else? You're still no less effective. You're still as effective. And you still get to your corporate goal of reduction in headcount and reduction in cost and overhead cost to your business. But there's a different way of doing it. I think the other thing is that, if I might just briefly add, is that we're dealing with a demographic that's of a different era and a different age. And I think if I were the people systems person, I would be very mindful that I'm possibly dealing with, you know, the gig economy or millennials that broadly have had never anybody has said no to them. And sadly, the coronavirus is delivering a message that in some instances that it is not possible to say yes. But if you're going to have to deliver that message, what are the alternatives? And I do think some organisations are being really creative at the moment about what the alternatives are. A decade ago, leaders of organisations would have said no to working from home. And likewise, leaders of organisations are now saying, how can I adapt to that? And how can I encourage my employees to stay at home? Because actually, I don't want them getting on a bus or a train or a car and spending an hour commuting, because actually they're no less effective. In fact, they're more effective being in the home environment than they would have been in the office environment. So I think we've all learned an awful lot about this. And we've also, I think we've also learned a lot about ourselves as well. Whilst it's not been pleasant in some instances, I think we've been surprised by some of the results in other instances.
I just wanted to say thank you so much for educating us and for sharing things with us. And I just wanted to ask a final question about if you had sort of one thing you wanted to leave with, whether it's what a CSR department can do, what organization you should reach out with, a piece of advice to take away for those that have been listening and think, actually, I need to make a difference and this is not okay. What would you leave that person with as an answer?
I think it comes, for me, it's take a holistic, take a system view. Don't just think about yourself in the round. Think about the associated businesses, the associated partners, the associated organizations, because actually I think what we have proven going into Corona was where we were operating in silos, an old phrase I know, but actually what we've realized is by collaborating, by partnering and thinking outside of the norm, we've ended up being better people and better businesses. And I would encourage, and it's very difficult because sometimes it's easy to revert back to the norm, I would encourage organizations to keep doing what they're doing and be that caring organization that they have suddenly become as a result of coronavirus.
Richard, thank you so much for that conversation. It was incredibly valuable. And I'm sure that there are a lot of people listening that would really like to find out more information. So where can they find you online or your organization?
So organisation, it's Footworks on Facebook. You can find me at Cheltenham55 on Twitter. And it's MHS Homes Group if you want to follow me on housing.
Thank you, Richard.
Remember, you can find videos and articles about this series on the Yahoo Finance UK site. And if you've enjoyed this series, please rate, review and subscribe so we can let you know when the next series of talks will be available. Hopefully, you'll be able to come along for live recordings.
Thank you to all those who have joined us over the past few weeks for discussion around corporate social responsibility at a time of global crisis. There are so many unique challenges to think about, and we hope we've helped you break some of the echo chambers surrounding these social issues. Until next season, stay safe.